You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, This Week, featuring news and commentary on This Week in Black Hollywood. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live This Week, Dario Kristen.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You're watching Black Hollywood Live This Week. I'm your host, Dario Kristen, and here joining me in the studio is Courtney Stewart.
Hello, everybody.
And DJ Jesse J.
What up?
On today's show, we have a variety of different topics, including Gabby Douglas, the Olympic gymnast, a new biopic possibly will be coming out on her. We have the backlash towards Russell Simmons over the spoof on the Harriet Tubman sex video, as well as this weekend is the 50th anniversary for the March on Washington. So we want to celebrate that.
And Wayne Brady.
We got an exclusive with Wayne Brady. He's going to discuss Let's Make a Deal and some other things he's been working on. But first up, we are going to read the results from last week's BuzzMeter question, which is Russell Simmons' Harriet Tubman parody going too far? You guys voted. 67% of you said yes, 23% said no, and 11% are undecided.
All right.
What do you guys think?
Went too far.
I voted no.
Are you kidding me?
Really?
I mean, you know, it just, I think this is why I voted no.
I
just feel like at some point, once again, we've talked about this on the show, that we take things so seriously sometimes mm-hmm. that a little comic relief mm-hmm. doesn't hurt us. I mean, we obviously know that this, it was just a spoof. So, I know, I get it,
I just feel like the timing of it.
The timing is bad, I will say that for sure. Especially as we're celebrating the March on Washington.
Well, we'll talk about Russell and his thoughts again later.
We will. Now, I want you guys to go to the BuzzMeter question this week, which is, do you think Obama would still be president if he was dark-skinned?
Ooh.
That's a good one.
That is something to think about.
And that's off of J. Cole's comment this week, which we'll get into.
All right. So what do we have for the trending topics, Jesse?
Well, unfortunately, not anything too happy with the first one. Knocked myself down.
What's going on?
Actor Lee Thompson Young. You might know him from Nickelodeon's The Famous Jet Jackson.
Yeah.
Was found dead in his apartment or his home here in L.A., and it was linked to a suicide.
That's crazy.
His publicist, Lori Jonas, confirmed that as he was supposed to be on set, he didn't show up. So the producers called the manager of the building.
And it's Rizzoli and Isles,
right? Rizzoli and Isles.
Yep. That's the show.
The landlord went in, found Lee's body dead on the ground. They are targeting it with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Nobody really knows why or, what was going on in his mind. But there have been ties saying that his family said he was dealing with depression.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, this is something I've said this many times on the show, like depression is really a serious thing. And I don't think people take it really seriously.
That's true.
And it's just really sad because, I mean, he had a lot going for him. You know, he's very young.
Yeah.
And my thing is every time we talk about a death recently, have you guys noticed it's always on a Monday? Yeah. I just started noticing because I looked up the date.
Yeah, when they do it.
He died on a Monday. And what was it? Chris from Criss Cross.
He died.
Corey Monteith. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Sketchy.
Yeah, so unfortunate.
I just, it's also very unfortunate, too. I've actually met Lee a couple times, and he was a nice guy. And, you just never know what's going on in someone's mind. So
that is true.
The BHL family definitely gives our condolences to Lee's family. Hate to hear such a young talent that we've lost. So,
absolutely. All right, let's move on to some a little more cheerful. Gabby Douglas, Olympic gold medalist. If you guys aren't sick of her from seeing her on TV, well, get ready because you're about to see her on TV again because she's getting her own biopic.
Oh, my.
Congratulations to her. They say that the movie's going to be based on her. It's a made-for-TV movie, and it's basically the story of when her parents sent her off to, I think it was, Iowa?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Iowa. In Iowa, where she trained for 2 years to go to the Olympics. So we're going to kind of get to see that growth in her. She's going to they're going to be filming in September in Canada for it. So
she playing herself?
She's not playing herself. They haven't announced who's going to be playing her. Which so, I'm kind of
surprised.
Why
she's not
wouldn't
playing herself?
She play herself?
She
totally
should play herself.
Her three.
Because it happened on
last
year.
I mean, if Fantasia
year.
Can play herself
yeah, exactly.
in her TV movie, can we get Gabby to play
she
herself?
She probably doesn't want to if she's not, because I can't imagine they wouldn't have told her to play herself.
Like, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see with to. That. But
she
this,
might be training for the next Olympics, actually.
There you
true.
Go.
True.
I think it's an inspiring story, but I'd kind of like her to hold off a little bit before we get a...
I feel like it's a little soon.
It's like, whoa.
But she's a gymnast. If she goes to the next Olympics, their shelf life is pretty short. So nobody's going
to
care when the next Olympics comes around in, two more years?
True.
That Gabby Douglas, it'll be irrelevant at that point. So I kind of get why they're doing it now.
Got to ride the train.
If it's a Lifetime movie, I think it's great.
And, so this is also coming off her sharing her life story in the memoir, Raising the Bar, which is a continuation of her first autobiography, Grace, Gold, and Glory, My Leap of Faith. So...
All
it's
right,
gonna be.
Girl.
This is the year of Gabby.
Let me tell you what I love about Gabby. Outside of her being an Olympic gymnast, she had so much hate about her hair while she was in the Olympics. And I tell you what, every time I see her now, laid out.
Yep.
She got
that
it.
Almost makes
she
me mad.
Got her hair did every time I see her out right now. It makes you mad. No, I mean,
it kind of annoys me. But
why?
Whatever.
Why isn't it?
Just number one, the point that they made anything about hair to begin with. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with
so
that.
So stupid.
Yeah.
And then it almost annoys me that because now we have to comment on it, and that's something that she probably has present in her mind.
True.
It's different if she was on red carpets before the Olympics and her hair was like that, because whatever. But she's working out. She's in a gym and cartwheeling and whatever.
Yeah.
This
isn't the Beyonce show.
Yeah.
I don't want her with a full wig, press-on nails.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, now Beyonce doesn't have that anymore.
Yeah. I would kind of. It almost makes me want her to just roll up on a carpet with her hair, just doing whatever the hell it
pull
wants
back
to
in a little ponytail.
Just to be I can do what I want. But anyway, that's just my
All right,
own.
Well, congratulations to
Gabby. That'll be interesting. Yeah.
Yes. And so, moving on from Gabby. Maybe you're a young girl out there in the world and you want to go to college and, maybe you don't have any hobbies, but you could follow the likes of Miley Cyrus because Juicy J is giving a $50,000 scholarship to the girl who can send in the best twerk video.
Now, that's just ignorant. I mean, come on.
Here's my thing. I mean, congratulations for him to be giving out educational scholarships. But my thing is what is that girl going to be like? She's going to go to school and be like, hey, so what did you get in here? Financial aid? No, I got a scholarship. Oh, my God, a scholarship on what? Twerking. Miley Cyrus, what?
That's just crazy to me. Now, if you got a twerking scholarship and you were going to be on the dance team or something like that, somehow combining those two, okay, I could get with that. It just seems real ghetto to have a twerking scholarship. It's very strip club. Right.
I'm working at the club to make my money for school. So,
right.
I mean, I guess we should be happy.
I guess.
A scholarship, but really?
I mean, you got to go whichever way you can go, but geez.
So, the person that invents the most interesting new dance?
Well, so it's going to be.
It
has to be to this new song that he's coming out. He says, the new song I'm going to release is not a strip song.
Oh, God.
It's not a weed song, and it's not a trap song.
Okay.
It's an educational song, but it's still ratchet.
All right.
My people.
Juicy J can't. So I'm excited. I think that,
He said he's excited.
Hey, if y'all can get excited about Dr. Drew and Michelle Obama singing about vegetables.
Side note, have you seen the video?
I saw the video and it is good. I can't relax. It's good.
Bye, Felicia. I'm going to be mad if one of the Obama.
Dr. Oz was flowing just
Dr. O. Dr. O's got a little bit of flow.
So see what I mean? I mean, I like that hip hop is being involved with sending kids to school.
But can we not
education?
Put our girls on the pole? I mean, that's essentially telling them, sanctioning. Let's put you on the stage, which is essentially the pole, and give.
I mean, you can be doing your math homework twerking. You got some Juicy J on. You'd be like, hey. I don't know whether y'all think Juicy J and the twerk thing is good or not. Let us know.
Somehow, YouTube. I think I know the answer to our next buzzer beater question.
All right, so. Speaking of the buzzer meter question, J. Cole came out and made a pretty bold statement. Some are saying it's an obvious statement. Some people are kind of upset with what he said. I'm actually just going to read it and see what you guys Think about it. Okay. It's actually referencing himself, his skin color, and Obama's skin color, and kind of where they are in the music industry and in politics. The that brainwashing that tells us that light skin is better, it's subconsciously in us, whether we know it or not, still pursuing light skin women. There are some women out there that are like, I don't even like light skin men. And that's fine. But Barack Obama would not be president if he were dark skin. You know what I mean? That's just the truth. I might not be as successful as I am now if I was dark skin. I'm not saying that for sure. I'm still as talented as I am, and Obama is still as smart as he is. But it's just the sad truth. That's something that I feel like somebody my age that's white doesn't have to go through, especially in New York City. On the other hand, every time I'm on a plane in first class, this is a lesser evil, but it still represents their mind state. I promise you, 60% of the time somebody asks me what basketball team do I play for or do I rap. It's kind of all over the place with what he was saying, but I mean, what do you guys think? I think we've kind of spoken about this on a weekly basis.
I mean, honestly, there is a element that I've always thought that if he was a dark-skinned president-elect, he might not have made office. I think that it's easier for the world, and I'll say non-black people, to be more accepting of someone who is lighter skinned. It's less intimidating. And I don't think that he might have been given the same opportunity if he was, I'll say, a dark skinned black man. Yes, I agree with that.
I don't agree with him kind of comparing himself, because as a rapper, I think it's a little
I don't agree with his reference to comparing himself to Obama.
I mean, let's look at the top rappers, or Jay-Z, Kanye West, who are all dark-skinned.
Yeah, or at least brown-skinned. Yeah. Yeah.
Courtney?
I would like to think it's not the case, but I definitely don't necessarily think that America would have been ready for, like, big dark skin, what is sort of considered in this country still by most quite an intimidating figure is a dark skin, strong black man. And right. I think that it's, I mean, I feel like it's kind of no different than sort of the Hollywood thing. Like, it's a little bit more accepting and okay when it's a biracial girl, like how Halle Berry kind of came up in the ranks and won her Oscar. Like, it's just something that's, for whatever reason, whatever it is, there's lots of things we could say that it is, but it's more something that's more identifiable with people that are not black when they're not necessarily dealing with a full-on, like, I am black person. So right. I could see that President Obama probably, I don't know that he would have as easily gotten into the circles that he needed to get into to do the things that he needed to do with the color of his skin. But that being said, he also had a beautiful chocolate wife on his arm, and lots would say that if that were true, then the wife on his arm would have been a problem also, and it seemed to work out pretty well. So maybe it's not as much the case.
See, but I disagree. I don't think that even Michelle had necessarily anything to do with his initial perception within the politics.
Really?
Yeah, I think that was, as he grew and gained more popularity, people were accepting or fine with it. But I think initially, I think it was just all about the way he presented himself and them and people saying, okay, I think it was just easier for him to be a lighter skinned man and be able to maneuver the way he has. Look at the way, like Courtney said, with casting. We have the big uproar with the Nina Simone movie where Hollywood won't cast a dark-skinned person who looks like Nina Simone, but they cast Zoe Saldana, and she's, you know, a lighter-skinned minority woman. I think it's the same thing. I think that it wouldn't have been as accepting, and I think that Michelle probably wasn't as important at the time when he was first starting off. I think that if he was a dark-skinned man, I think it would have been a bigger issue.
See, I don't know, because I kind of look at it in the sense of, as a politician, you look at who they're married to, their family life, and to me, if everything we're talking about, as far as what the white community sees or the news and the media puts out on as a general statement about the black man and his so-called not taking care of his family and things like that, I feel like that kind of worked for Obama in the sense of, wow, here's this man, look at their family, they're amazing unit, like I don't know. To me, that would kind of be more accepting. And I'm going based off. I can't. But I don't know. I think that also does help him in the beginning. I don't know. Do you look at it like that?
I mean, I think that starting out, it's one of those things, like the doors, sometimes the window has to be like inched up a little bit for you to kind of go in. And I feel like if he were a dark-skinned black man with his dark-skinned wife and dark-skinned children, it would have been not so, and it may not be completely conscious that
right. All
the white folks at the politics
exactly.
meetings are
yeah.
like,
that's
dang,
not what
he's
I'm
a dark-skinned dude. Like, I
right.
think it is just, and I think it's a perception not just that white people have, people of color.
People of color,
yeah,
perception. We have our own hate within our
there
own community.
There is something yeah. just more acceptable or easier to sort of identify and accept as okay, so
yeah.
to speak, mm-hmm. in lighter-skinned people. And it's been that way for a variety of reasons for a long time. So I think it's very possible that that was definitely an influence
yeah.
in those opportunities coming to him that may not have come to him if he were regular old chocolate man.
And right. do you guys see this opening the door for a darker skin yet? Or do you think we're not ready for that?
I think we'll go woman first and then dark skin man
really?
Down the line. I think we'll get a woman before the dark skin
never
man.
Never get a black woman though.
Really?
Do
you see women first?
Oh, I definitely see a woman first before. Really? Because,
yeah.
and just only based solely on the fact that since President Obama's been in office, think about how much commentary there has been on from non-black people about him not being black enough
right.
and not showing,
yeah.
like, our twisted up thoughts about race and issues and what represents black and what is still effed up.
It's crazy.
I don't think that we're at a place where it would be like, it would be miraculous. Like, what's the dude that ran the guy that had the pizza shops that was a Republican in the primary and was trying to run and he got kicked out because he liked women too much. Herman Cain.
Oh, Herman Cain. Yeah.
Okay. So like Herman Cain would be like the regular old black dude, like kind of coming up in the
right,
room.
Right.
I just don't see that and not obviously not Herman Cain being the example because he had a variety of other reasons why.
Yes, he did.
Whatever. But, yeah, he sort of that, it just doesn't line up, I think, with what we still have in our brains in this country.
And how do you guys feel about J. Cole? I mean, he's kind of been in the news the past couple of weeks, bringing up some pretty big topics. How do you feel? A young rapper whose people
smart.
Are being looked at.
I'm not mad at J. Cole. I mean, he's bringing conversations to light that are uncomfortable and we have to talk about them.
Yeah. And it's not things that we don't think. And
yeah.
like these things exist.
These are dinner table conversations
that
we have
all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not had across the table with our friends of other races or what have you. Like,
right.
and maybe it needs to be more because it's still an awkward sort of.
It's really interesting how hip hop is kind of really.
It's the new politics.
A lot of, yeah, a
it's
lot of things.
It
can do so much more.
It can.
I'm so glad it's on this path. Like,
yeah.
hopefully that's sort of our, like, we're having a moment.
Yeah, especially
like
when
really
months
explode.
Ago we've been talking about rappers getting kicked out of, like, brand endorsements because of saying
yes.
things like Molly and,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
rape. So it's nice and refreshing, actually, to have the other side
yeah.
where it's more positive.
And so speaking of the other side, last week we talked about Big Sean and Kendrick Lamar. They came
yeah.
out with the song Control, and Kendrick Lamar called out all the New York rappers, the old school heads, the newcomers, called everybody out and, you know, basically said, I'm the best and who wants to challenge me? So we actually sat down with Wayne Brady at Let's Make a Deal, and Wayne had something to say about the song.
Right.
Hey guys, welcome to Black Hollywood Live this week. We are here with the one and only Wayne Brady. Wayne, what's going on, sir?
Everything. I just got finished. We're sitting down. This audience just left. You saw me. I was giving away money to people dressed as giraffes, screaming people, folks jumping on my back, grabbing my ass, just all in the name of money. All in the name of money.
And we're here on the set of Let's Make a Deal. That is right.
Yes, that only happens here on the set. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
All right, so hot topics going on this week. I don't know. I'm sure you have to be living under a rock. Have you heard the Big Sean and Kendrick Lamar song, Control?
Absolutely.
All right, so obviously Kendrick has kind of caused up quite a stir, you know, calling out his friends in his own song and also claiming he's the king of New York. What's your take as far as Kendrick making this bold statement?
I say yes, simply because if you're a fan of hip-hop, and I think of a fan of music in general, but if you're a fan of hip hop and you've been a fan of hip hop, I'm not saying the stuff that's on the radio now, like old school hip hop, and you get what he's doing, he is doing it old school, what they used to do. Everybody was the best. You had Run DMC. I'm the best. I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Sucker MCs. You had LL saying that he was the best. All of these dudes, everybody claimed that they were the best, and all of the beef, it was kept there on wax. It was on the radio. And that competition, like any good business or economy, kept driving everyone to be better. That's what he wanted, because you turn on the radio now and you throw a rock at an MC, the chains of this and everybody's auto-tuned that, and the rhyme consists of, I went out dough, 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 I got my dough, 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 re me, dough, 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 I open my dough. He's like, shut the hell up.
Two chains,
three chains, you got chains, yes.
So if you could say one final thing out there to all the hip-hop artists who are kind of upset with Kendrick, what would you say to them?
I would say step up to the plate. There's nothing to be upset about. And in fact, I would look at this as an opportunity to go, okay, it's really time to show everybody who the greatest alive is.
Hey, that's some great things to say. I love that he knew his rap, too. He knew the rap game.
I mean, and he must have been hyping some people up at home,
because
they was just trying to call on in today, huh?
You want to take that caller?
Let's just take the caller, because, sure. I mean, dang. Caller, you're on the line with Black Hollywood Live this week. What's your name? Where are you from?
Caller? All right, well, I guess we've lost our caller. They got so excited they had to hang up. All right, well, that was great. Thank you, Jesse.
It was. And you can check out more different TV shows and after shows over at AfterBuzzTV.com. Whatever your favorite TV show is, make sure you guys, as soon as you finish watching it, type www.AfterBuzzTV.com, and we're probably talking about whatever your favorite TV show is. Scandal, Deception, Real Housewives of Atlanta's coming back, so... AfterBuzzTV.com.
Oh, yeah.
Courtney, Gossip and Rumors. There was a lot this week.
OMG, was there ever. And not only was there a lot this week, there was a lot of real crazy stuff that didn't quite make any sense this week. But starting off at the top of the list, Raz B. For those of you who have absolutely no idea who the hell that is, he was in a boy group called B2K back in the early 2000s that did pretty well. But apparently, this week, he was hanging out in China, supposedly caught a beatdown at a club, and ended up in a coma. It's very upsetting, very sad. It went all out over social media that Raz B is in a coma. Well, turns out that never actually happened. We don't really understand or know how this all came about, but what seems to be the case is, so Raz B has a brother who goes by the name of Ricky Romance, and he's sort of taking responsibility for the blow up in the social media, because he was saying that he heard from what seemed to be a legit source that his brother was in a coma, and he was just trying to contact anybody possible that would have been around him or whatever to figure out where he was in Shanghai, like, can he get to the hospital, what hospital was it, anything, and that's what sort of blew up the social media scene. But there was also a person by the name of Toy Jones, who is credited as being the original source to a social media website in China as providing this information that Raz B was actually in a coma. And Toy Jones also contacted CNN with this information on Saturday, then followed that contact on Sunday with a written statement saying Raz B had miraculously come out of the coma and was doing very fine. CNN did not run the story yet at that point because they were confused as hell too. So then after that, Raz B also emailed CNN and told them not to run the story because it was not true. And Toy Jones is still saying that Raz B's family hired her to get the story out. So we're all still sitting kind of confused. I don't really know what's going on.
I'm just hoping, Raz, you good.
He seems to be
at the end of the day, that's all I'm going to say. I don't know about the rest of the story.
Why, how, all the twists and turns in this was insane. But Raz B's representative did say that the singer, is doing fine and that the story was false.
That's horrible PR if that's what this was. Yeah. And as far as CNN, I'm like, if I was CNN at one point, I would have been like, I mean, really, who cares?
I mean, I'm
like,
right. Oh,
but then, no, the thing is, too, is like RASB hasn't made an official statement from him. Like, I need to see something from him.
I don't care.
No.
I mean, I hear
you. This story is just funny to me.
We've already given it too much attention. It's ridiculous.
You're right. But when they started including CNN and things like that, I'm like, come on now. Yeah, what's going on?
That craziness about telling them 1 minute and then releasing, like, a written statement was sent to CNN that he had miraculously recovered.
Yeah.
So I don't know who Toy Jones is. RASB, I don't know who you hanging out with over there, but you probably should stop.
Yeah.
That's all we got to say about that.
Moving on
to interesting people doing interesting things. So Sean Diddy Combs is being sued.
Take that.
The intern's name is Rashida Salam, and she is suing Bad Boy Entertainment. Basically, she was working as an unpaid intern from January to May of 2012, and she is currently suing Bad Boy Entertainment for not paying her, even though she was hired as an unpaid intern. And
we have to reiterate
that. Do you understand
point?
The words that are coming out of my mouth?
Unpaid intern, but she was very surprised and upset about the duties that she actually had to do as an unpaid intern. Mm-hmm. Some of those duties included getting coffees and lunch, answering phones, gift wrapping, and deliveries.
Girl, bye.
So basically, she didn't like to do things that all interns have to do.
She just was surprised that she had to do it. Maybe it was the quantity.
What did she think she was
doing? I don't know what she thought she was doing, but she obviously thought she deserved to get paid for it. But as shady as this probably sounds and probably seems impossible for her to win anything, there is a little bit of a legal thing that might give her some leverage in New York because apparently, very recently, a federal judge in New York, U.S. District Judge William H. Pauley, made a decision in regards to a Fox Searchlight Pictures project. They basically were found to have been in violation of minimum wage and overtime laws by not paying interns who worked on the production of the 2010 movie Black Swan. And so a lot of experts are there's right now there's a little bit of a gray area because these employers can apparently be sued. And according to that case, can win. People can win even though they were hired as unpaid interns because there are some minimum wage laws and things that obviously are broken because you're unpaid intern, but it's a possibility, I guess.
Well, I clearly needed to have these laws when I was an intern because I used to be an intern at Vibe magazine, and let me tell you something, I didn't...
Oh boy, you're just putting people's buttons in something right now.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get no payment, and I had to do all the stuff she said on that list, plus more.
Well,
that's the hustle. That's
they say that, but there is also a good argument for this whole idea with the district court judge that made this decision. It sort of leaps into this further conversation of the fact that, yes, especially these unpaid internships are often in sort of entertainment places, communications, industries, and that type of thing. Places where getting in the door is obviously very difficult. But doing these, taking advantage of these kids in unpaid internships gives an unfair sort of advantage to people who maybe come from means and can take a free job all summer to get their foot in the door because they have somebody that can help pay their rent or do whatever when there's these other students that are just as qualified and deserving of getting in the door, but they cannot take these unpaid jobs when these employers would be hiring someone in any other circumstance to do the duties that these unpaid interns do. So there's a weird sort of space, which is funny to me because I'm like, I did plenty of unpaid internships, still kind of do them sometimes, and you work for free a lot when you're trying to break into businesses.
Right.
So it's an interesting thought that, because I do think it's a fair argument that there's so, especially with college students and students that are coming up and the amount of money they spend to go to college to begin with, the fact that it closes off a lot of the industry for a lot of these people because it's almost impossible to exist as an unpaid intern live in cities like New York and LA to make it. Like, I think it's a kind of interesting and fair argument to kind of talk about.
It's funny because you go on Craigslist all the time and you go through all the jobs like that and you look at some of them and you're like, okay, yeah, I'd love to do that. And it's like, not paid internship.
Right.
Exactly.
And you sit there and you're like, all right, and you do it. And then it's kind of, there comes a point where it's like, I feel like there should be a time stamp where, you know, you kind of, you know, you do it for free for 6 months and then we talk about putting you on minimum wage and moving that forward. And I think we would have less of these types of problems. And it kind of gives more of an incentive anyways, period, for these people to start working in it. It's just, of course, obviously, well, for us to hear her say,
I had to make coffee.
Yeah. But it also would be interesting to see what the hours she really was doing.
And that's what I was going to say earlier, like, because, you know, I have friends who have worked for Diddy and Bad Boy and back in those days, and they can keep some irregular hours. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if the intern was being called at 12 o'clock at night to go make a delivery or rap, you know, some album covers, you know, whatever, sure, that's different than your regular 8 to 5 or 8 to 2 for an intern. Yeah. But I think that, you know, hopefully she'll win, because if she doesn't, she'll never be hired as an intern anywhere else.
But the other interesting part, too, about the sort of conversation around this is the argument of all these college students taking all these unpaid internships for college credit, so to speak. But then they're doing menial tasks like just making copies and doing, you know, whatever. It's not a legit education in this business. Right. And there are a lot of internships that are literally, they should be hiring someone to just do this stuff because it's just the menial task. It's not actually educating this kid that's getting college credit for this. So there's a whole argument, too, around them setting up a situation where if you're saying they can get college credit for it, it has to be like a legitimate sort of situation where they're actually getting something and, out of that, but, which I think is fair.
I agree, but my only argument with that, too, is that, you know, you have to hustle. So if they're giving you a basis on, you know, these five bullet points of only this is what the intern's going to do, you have to hustle and work around that and learn what you can and get your own mix going on in there.
Of course.
That's yes, but also it's funny because I'm seeing on the opposite flip side, not only in the entertainment business, but in retail, a lot of my friends have started to notice. And it's just, at first I thought it was just a regional thing, but a lot of my friends throughout the United States, a lot because of the Obamacare, they're pulling back on full time.
Yeah.
And they're hiring 20 people versus they would only have 10 people working there and they would be full time, but they're doing everybody part time so that they get hardly any hours and that they aren't eligible for any type of paying their health for their health care. So I don't know. It's just kind of, I see the same thing with this. It's like, well, if we just get all these interns, we don't have to worry about health care. We don't have to worry about paying for them. We don't got to really worry about them.
It's an easy avenue for employers to run their businesses with no overhead. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a fair practice.
It's not fair when you start thinking about how much millions of dollars these record companies and these labels are making. So for them to, even if it's just like a $500 stipend
or
for
some
the
kind
summer.
Of housing stipend.
Yeah,
or something.
Something like that where it's not going to kill them to pay five interns $500 a piece for the summer. You know what I mean? And that's something.
It's Bad Boy Baby.
It's Bad Boy Baby. Especially when you see him, you know, on his yacht, you know, with Naomi Campbell.
Hanging out.
You know, in Greece.
So, good luck, Miss Lady.
Good luck with that.
Rashida Salaam. Good luck with that.
I see Diddy more settling it on the side.
Well, probably.
Probably.
If it even gets that far.
Yeah,
like, who knows? She might have just filed and then she'll evaporate.
Right.
Nonetheless, we have more crazy stories going on. So, if you have been paying attention to the celebrity news tree for the last 2.5 months, there seems to be a little trouble in paradise. For those of you that heart Clomar the way that I do, that would be Khloe Kardashian Odom and Lamar Odom, her husband. There's some trouble in paradise, apparently, and just this summer alone, two women have already come forward saying they have had some exciting sexual flings with Mr. Lamar Odom. And Khloe has purportedly kicked him out of the house, and he supposedly has been staying at hotels. However, Ms. Kris had to step in. Kris Jenner had to step in with her daughter. And according to Radar Online, she is telling her daughter, absolutely do not file for divorce. Do not leave your husband. You must work this out. And we haven't really heard much from Khloe, which is very atypical of Khloe. When, like, crazy rumors come out and stuff like that, she usually is right on top of them and will say something or say something really smart-ass, which is awesome, on Twitter or what have you. But she's been fairly quiet about the situation. And the most recent woman was a woman by the name of Paula Polonsky, who is works in the DA office, in the Los Angeles Attorney's Office downtown. So she's saying that she had a 6-week affair with Lamar starting in early June. And that's sort of the same time frame that Khloe has since kicked him out. And she passed a polygraph. who takes a polygraph about cheating? I have no idea where this information came from.
It's Jerry Springer.
Did you go to Maury?
Like, I know. I'm like, who did y'all call? Right. Like, what's going on? Right. So, anywho, Kris Jenner thinks she's encouraging Khloe to just deal with it, figure it out, and stay married to her husband.
Now, is she saying this because of, you know, her history with possibly having an affair in her relationship?
Oh,
or
no,
is this, honey. Or this, does this rule go back to the Kobe Bryant thing that I heard that his wife, she was advised to stay with him for a certain amount of time so she could be guaranteed a certain amount of money?
Yes.
So is it, you know.
I can't imagine.
I mean, Khloe's got her own money.
She's got her own money.
Lamar's well off, but he's not like, oh, he's not Kobe.
Now, through the grapevine.
And they ain't got no babies.
I think I might have mentioned this before.
Yes, we have a little special.
Through the grapevine, I have from a very close source.
Gossip and rumors.
Who ain't gonna be told. This is why this is called Gossip and Rumors.
Oh, yes.
But
what we had heard was,
allegedly, Khloe's fine with it. And that's why she ain't hasn't made a statement. That's why she's kind of kicking back. That Khloe is kind of a little freak in the sheets herself and doesn't mind it. She knows she's a basketball wife at the end of the day. And there have also been rumors that she's even partaken in some of the extracurricular activities. This is all allegedly rumors. Rumor had it.
Rumor.
But it's from a very
interesting... Why is Lamar at the gas station having Malika bringing some clothes from the
that's
house?
That's true.
So if that's the case...
I think maybe it went awry. Maybe there was like, oh, I just... Like, they were like, okay, we're going to do like a group situation. Oh, I did not approve of that trick.
Or saying...
He did it anyway.
Right.
And maybe that's what's going on.
Or it's like... I thought we did that on Saturday. It's Tuesday. Why is she still here?
Oh, yeah. She's in my house.
It could be a Chad and Evelyn thing, too, if you remember that. Evelyn said, like, look, I know what you do. Just, you know, wrap it up, do you, and whatever. Then when they got married, it was more along the lines of, like, bitch, what the hell are these condoms doing here 30 hours after we got married?
Right.
So.
Interesting. Well, Khloe, hope it's all okay.
Oh, the world of love and hip-hop.
Love and hip-hop and basketball wise and all of it is real.
I can't
nasty.
Wait to go home and watch the Kris Jenner and Kanye West
interview. Yeah, so for those of you that haven't watched it should be online by now. Mm-hmm. Kris Jenner interviewed Kanye West this afternoon about his life and his child, and we finally got to see a picture of baby Nori. She's adorable.
She's cute. She's okay. A combination of both, it looks like.
And I just have a total, like, this is a total jump off subjects.
Yes.
Jump off?
It's a jump off subject.
Okay. Jump off subject.
But we've talked about it here on Black Hollywood Live, and we haven't actually brought it up as a topic, and it aired last week. But I kind of want to know what you guys thought of the whole Oprah Lindsay Lohan thing.
Ha, ha, ha.
And this is just something I haven't been able to really talk to anyone. I just watched it recently.
Talk about it. That's
did you
true.
Take it as sincere, or...
I felt like it was sincere, but I felt like it was a lot of fluff. And I will say that because Oprah, we all know I adore Oprah. I want Oprah to adopt me. I want to be Oprah's best friend. But I found it strange. Like, Lindsay would answer, I believe there was a question, I can't remember exactly what Oprah asked her, but her response was, I know what my demons are, and I'm dealing with them. And Oprah never went that next question to be like, well, what exactly are those demons? Mm-hmm. What are you fighting and struggling against, like, within you? And that happened constantly throughout that interview. So everything that Lindsay, even though I felt like Lindsay was being honest and sincere, I still felt like it was very, all her answers seemed very surface. Yeah.
How did you feel about when she brought up, that she said, what are you addicted to? And she said, I'm addicted to drinking. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes. Yeah.
And then when she brought up the Coke thing, obviously, like, now Molly is, like, the new white girl.
Yeah.
But before it was Lindsay Lohan, and that's what would be the reference to cocaine. And, I mean, Lindsay comes on, she says, look, I said 3 to 4 times. That's not true. I did it, like, 10 to 15 times. She was like, but I'm not, like, a Coke head. Like, yeah. I did it to drink more. The people I was watching it with, they were like, oh, please, she's an addict. I don't know. I kind of believe it. If you're in the light and you're in the party situations and you get caught by the paparazzi the days that you are with Paris Hilton and doing coke and stuff like that, I don't know. I totally believe that she is – the alcohol was the problem.
Because I feel like there's lots of people that do a lot of different things. Like, they drink. They do a lot. But, like, something like with her, with the cocaine thing, it seemed like that was a social situation. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, it's there. I'll do it. But it's not something that I have to go find and I need. Whereas the alcohol for her was something – like, I believe that for sure.
I believe alcohol. I also – the only thing is with the drugs is that the next day she was photographed again with her ex-boyfriend, the one who was arrested for the cocaine possession.
Mm-hmm.
The heir, I forgot his name, but I believe, like, you know, you also are very similar to the company that you keep. So I don't know if I believe. I felt like a lot of her things were very, as Courtney said, on the surface. And I don't think that, I think that they just, she had the answers already lined up.
Yeah.
She wanted to answer sure. everything. Yeah. And that's what I feel like. So I didn't feel the,
a good,
so, like a good get juicy deep, something
like,
get
what
deep. Like,
really, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel that from her. Yeah.
But out of all the Oprah interviews, I think that was one of the better ones. Because the Beyonce one and Rihanna one, I didn't get.
But see, that's the same thing I felt about the Beyonce one yeah. with Oprah. Like, I felt like it came, well, in Beyonce's case, I felt like Oprah was just more being a fan in that interview and sort of talking to her about it. But I just didn't feel like anything went deep for any of those. Or, actually, I think Rihanna was better than Lil Wayne.
Rihanna was a great one.
Yeah, I thought that was better than Lil Wayne. But I will say the one thing about Lindsay's interview that I sort of appreciated, I guess, was when she was sort of asked about her mom and her dad and like if she blames them for this and oh God, it seems like, you know, Oprah was kind of baiting her to be like, yeah, it was so bogus what my dad would do and blah, blah, blah. She definitely like affirmatively kept saying, I do not blame my parents for my mess. I'm messy. They're messy, but I don't blame them for me. Like, she didn't talk bad about her dad.
Yeah, she owned it herself.
She owned herself. Yeah. She didn't talk bad about her dad. And Lord knows she could say some stuff about her dad. And Lord knows she could say some stuff about her mom. But she really stayed on that path of both not, like, picking a side and staying in the middle. And I think that's probably more of an indication than anything else of why that poor child is all over the place.
Yeah.
Because she never wants to choose. And they were always sort of pulling at her in different directions.
And it made me miss her. Like,
yeah.
I want to see her in movies. I want her to... It made me realize why I liked her.
But she hasn't done a good movie in a long time. I don't really remember if I like her because...
The only thing
like
I like her is Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And I'm just like... Well, that's the only thing. Like, that's my heart of Lindsay Lohan. Like, oh my God, Mean Girls is my ish. Like, we repeat those things all the time. Like, and it's so sad that it's been so long since that happened. It's 10 years.
I'm going to have to see the canyons.
You know? So she's going to have to like...
That's supposed to be
good. I hope she brings it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I just want to put out there because we haven't
talked
about
it. All right. All right.
Well, she hasn't made a sex tape, so that's good.
Praise the Lord.
Let's
praise the Lord. Well, I mean, yeah, no.
Yeah.
All right.
That we know of.
That we know of.
That we know of. That's online.
I'm sure as soon as she, like, succeeds at something great, somebody's going to be like, I found a Lindsay Lohan
sex
tape.
Wow.
From 2006.
Anyway. All right. So moving on, speaking of famous, wonderful people saying interesting things.
And sex tapes.
We have, obviously, last week, we spoke about the Harriet Tubman sex tape, and our audience, you guys out there, have said, Russell Simmons, you probably went a little too far. Well, here's what Mr. Wayne Brady had to say about Russell Simmons and that sex tape. So, hello, Mr. Brady.
Hello, madam.
Do you know that this week there was a video released by Russell Simmons, all deaf digital, and it was called the Harriet Tubman sex tape?
I don't know what I'm more impressed by, the fact that he had a Harriet Tubman sex tape or the fact that he released it. What? No, I didn't see it. What the? It's, I don't understand. Is it her making love in a tunnel on the way to Canada? Is it? I don't understand. What is that?
So the Harriet Tubman sex tape was a comedy skit done by Russell Simmons' company, All Deaf Digital. And it was about Harriet Tubman basically showing how she coerced her master into letting her go on to freedom through recording their sexual activity together. And, of course, there's been a lot of outpouring of anger and frustration about this. How do you feel in terms of comedy, being the tremendous comedian and actor that you are? What sort of responsibility do you think is in place for these people and actors doing things like this? Do you think that because it was comedy, it sort of gets a pass?
You know, I've never been one of those people that because of comedy, because I just got into a discussion, and I use air quotes for discussion because I had to yell at some dude on Twitter, which I always find myself doing. And he said something really as ignorant, and I had to call him on it. And he said, and then his tweet was in a very hurtful tone, but why did you take it to heart? Cause you're a comedian. I didn't think anything offends you cause you guys can say anything you want. And the thing is, no, any person who calls himself a comic or a comedic actor that hides behind, oh, but it was a joke. There, a joke is a joke, but taste is taste. And being respectful is being respectful. A joke is supposed to be funny to somebody. At some point, just because you have a view and you hide behind the joke, it doesn't mean that it's not wrong. So I'd never condemn Russell, because I think that Russell Simmons has done so much for the community. And B, I would like to make videos with the company. But C, as a man and a comic and a dad, I think that we have certain figures that we have to keep sacred in a way. And I haven't seen the sketch, but in my writer's head, I'm like, I can't see that being very funny. So I'll have to look at it before I really call judgment, but you need to be responsible with what you say as a comic. Don't hide behind, well, it's a joke. And let's say that the sex tape thing was funny. That's cool, but I would love to see how they pulled it off, because I just can't see it being the best possible tasteful version of that.
Well, there you have it. All Def Digital. Get Wayne Brady on your show.
The big Wayne.
Get Wayne Brady on your show. So, obviously, that was Wayne's response based on him just hearing about the tape. So Russell has now come back again with more of a response. So initially, when the drama happened with the tape, his only response over Twitter was, "I'm sorry if I offended you. I guess I have a sensitivity chip missing. LOL. Haven't been in trouble since Def Jam." So it was sort of like a slight. It wasn't like a for real apology. It was kind of like, what's wrong with y'all? But he has since come back and kind of backed down quite a bit, saying that black women sort of are the reason that his idea has shifted. And he touts himself and says how he never backed down off of anything. Anytime he was going through stuff at Def Jam, like if somebody wanted him to remove things or change things, he would not do it. But he took this video down, and his response was basically that he was deeply, deeply sorry. He was telling the YouTube show Broke Down that he didn't realize that the tape, it implies the previous rapes. And he said, "I've always had controversy, but this is different because there is a line. When I got called that black women were disturbed by it, it broke my heart. And no one could make me move more swiftly to change than a black woman." So basically he's saying he never considered the rape portion of it. He just thought of it as, you know, the sort of like sex tape bargaining negotiation, like funny, what have you. And that the women in his life and around him talked to him, and he was like, all right.
Well, you know, when you put it in that perspective, like I was saying, that sometimes I feel like we take things too far of not being able to take a joke. But in with listening to that, my mind didn't even think about that. And that is something that, you know, is not a joke, and that we do need to be respectful of, and with our history with black women. And just, that's a good point.
I mean,
makes me think about it in a different way.
I hope so, Daryl, being that you were fine with
it. Now you can't take that vote back.
But. Well,
I still keep my vote. I'm all about the comedy, but I can respect that point.
Yeah.
And, of course, mean no disrespect to our African-American women. So.
Of course. And moving forward, Russell is apparently working on a film for the life of Frederick Douglass. And now he's hoping to maybe get into something and work on a film for Harriet Tubman with the same people he's working with for the Frederick Douglass film. So something amazing may come out of it.
Well, thank you for all of those rumors.
A Harriet Tubman film would be amazing.
It would, but I think it's kind of like
done.
Him doing it.
I think that it could be, I mean, we'll see.
With his connects, him behind
it,
I think it could be amazing.
It could be amazing.
That part.
We'll see.
All right. Well, where you will not find anything on Harriet Tubman is iTunes, but what you could do there is maybe you will, somebody else. Not our podcast. But you can go to iTunes and give us a rating. We love to see your feedback and hear your feedback on what you guys think about Black Hollywood Live. We have several shows. We have This Week. We have Portraits, Fashion 411, Justice is Served. Stand up, sit down, a variety under the Black Hollywood Live umbrella, and we definitely would love to hear what you guys have to say. So go vote, give us a rating, tell a friend, pass the word, promote Black Hollywood Live.
Yes, we love you for
it. We love you for that. All right, on to hot topics this week. Well, the first thing I want to say is that I'm happy and honored to be celebrating the 50th year of the March on Washington. It takes place this weekend.
Oh, yes.
There's several events that started today that are taking place. It started off with Obama giving a speech to the crowd. For those of you who don't know, the actual March on Washington took place with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech that in 1963, August 28th of 1963, which had 250,000 attendees. So it's a really big weekend, obviously, for us, I'm excited about, you know, celebrating this. Now, there's been several things in the news in comparisons to certain reporters who are saying, would Martin Luther King be proud of where we are at today in our society? And have we really, has his speech really been amplified? You know, I have a dream speech, but we still have 2013 where we're dealing with cases like Trayvon Martin. We are dealing with stop and frisk, you know, laws towards African-American men and Latinos. What do you guys think? I mean, do you think that he would be proud of where we've come as a nation since 1968?
Mm-hmm. I do think that. I mean, obviously, it's not where we... I mean, it ain't paradise.
But, that's for sure.
But we have... I mean, look at our president. Look at where we've came. Look at... Think of... How many years in between? I mean, just even talking to like my grandmother and just hearing the difference of when she was a little girl and when I was a little kid, like it's changing. Is it changing for the better? I think in a lot of ways it is. Are there still, Juicy J is giving away twerking scholarships. You know, at the end of the day, it's like you win some battles and some battles you just kind of got to be like, you know what, we're going to work on that tomorrow. But let's just focus on building the concrete. Let's build the foundation. And I think that the foundation is built. And I think that, you know, now it's just about building up from here. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's such a hard question.
It is hard.
Because it's one of those things where if he were alive today, I think things would be a lot different. Mm-hmm. Because I think that he did not get to share his full light. And I think that we as people, as Black people, needed that, and to have that extinguished was a detriment in a lot of ways for our community as a separate sort of from the bigger community. I think that he would be pleased with the steps that we have taken. And I think that, but I think the broader sensibility of the I Have a Dream speech and this idea of us loving and compassionate towards each other past color, past religion, past all of it, I think that's the sort of point where we still haven't quite grasped that it's not just about, because I feel like we're so caught up, like it's just about the whole black and the white and I see what I see kind of thing. Like we still haven't, which is, for instance, in the Trayvon Martin case, the idea that these jurors could not empathize with another child, perhaps because it wasn't a white child, is more the thing that we've missed than sort of, oh, okay, yay, now we can all work together and everybody can sit in the restaurants together. But I think that bigger step of like really embracing people as people and what love and compassion actually means to another human being is what we didn't quite get to, which I think he was really trying to get us to understand and embrace.
Well, I mean, just even just slowly, I see it happening, people being more accepted, especially more so in the younger communities. And whether it's race, sexuality, I mean, when I talk to the kids working at the Boys and Girls Club and seeing the things that can't even comprehend some of the stuff or problems that, you know, I dealt with in high school. Or so I definitely think we're starting to get there. Sometimes I don't know if that is a good or bad thing, because they're not worried about certain problems, but then they're doing other things, and it's within their own races and communities that it kind of becomes an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have heard Martin Luther King's perspective on the usage of the N-word and how we have talked about that so much in these last couple of weeks and how it's in media. I would have loved to hear what he had to say about rappers using it and just being used in everyday common language among, you know, everyone. So, but yes, but this is a week of celebration. So if you guys want to know more about that, there's plenty of information online. But definitely there's going to be a variety of different events taking place today through the 28th.
And an opportunity to think about what you're doing. What are you doing to make the dream still be alive?
Yes. Well, someone who I think Martin Luther King would have definitely been proud of is a woman by the name of Antoinette Tough. I think you guys heard this story this week about the shooting in Atlanta, which took place earlier this week. A gunman went into a school, McNair School, elementary school, in Decatur, Atlanta, and opened fire.
Decatur?
opened fire on the students. It has roughly around 870 students. No one was injured. Thank God everyone was able to get out through the teachers escorting them out and also police and SWAT team that were quickly on the scene. But there was one woman in particular who's getting a lot of praise in the media right now, Antoinette Tuff. She's one of the school teachers there.
She
worked in the front office. Yeah. She's a bookkeeper. Yeah. She's an 8-year school veteran. She was able to actually talk the gunman down and to turn himself into the police. There was initially some gunfire, I think, that kind of went back, a standoff that took place between the gunman and the police, and she was able to actually talk him, I'll say, off the ledge, because she spoke about her own personal experiences of her son, who she has a special needs son, as well as she spoke about her divorce and just kind of some of the problems that had happened in her life. Apparently, the identified gunman with the name of Michael Brandon Hill, he had no association with the school, but he had mentioned to Antoinette that he was off of his medication for a mental disorder.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Kudos to her.
That's a true hero.
She is a true hero. She saved many lives. And they also are saying now that they're looking at honoring her for her giving her an award for her merit, you know.
Low key, though, if that was me, I would have done the same thing. I'm like, you're going to kill me. You're going to hear my whole life story before you do so. You're going to think about me for the rest of your life.
It's amazing that she had the wherewithal. Because even after, she was like, I was scared to death. Like, oh, my God. Like, because it's one thing to be cool under pressure.
Right.
But to actually be able to think through some things and empathize and have compassion for this person that is literally in 1 second could take your life. Like, go her.
Yeah. Go her.
Go her.
We need to have her on the show.
We all need to.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And I did a little research here, and it's interesting because I feel like, you know, as of late, we've heard a lot more of these type of things, these gunmen going into into schools and shooting. Since the Newtontown, Connecticut tragedy in December, there have been 7 reported school shootings. Altogether, from January through now.
Yeah.
So, you know, a conversation I saw online talked about, you know, will these gun regulations help? But I think that will help a portion, but I think that it's beyond gun control.
It is.
Because people are always going to be able to have access to a gun. No matter if we outlaw every gun in the world, if they want it.
It'll be the people that don't need it that can get to them.
So it's an interesting conversation because it's like, well, what, you know, does gun control, gun regulations, will that really make a difference in these school shootings? Because they seem to be increasing.
Yeah. And this guy's brother was on, I believe, CNN talking about his frustration with the fact, like, well, he was frustrated that this woman was getting so much attention, which I totally didn't agree with. But he was also just saying how, like, instead of, because President Obama called the woman to sort of thank her and show his appreciation for what she did. And he was like, well, I wish Obama would be, you know, really talking about the mental health issues and how my family has struggled to try to keep him on his meds. Because, you know, once you get to an adult level, if you're not committed in a hospital, like, there's nobody necessarily there that can force you to do anything when you have these mental health issues. And really finding the resources for families that either don't have the means or just have the person that they can't get control of because it's an adult. Like, we really need to figure out some stuff.
Reach out to her.
Department,
reach out to her.
She has the stage right now.
She's got the skills.
Clearly,
she's got the skills. I was going to say.
And clearly, she empathizes. So, reach out to her and have her do something.
Hopefully, he gets it together and gets back on some meds. And
Yeah.
That's tough.
That's tough. It's tough, but once again, congratulations to Antoinette because she is truly a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Another headline story making waves this week is Mr. Michael Bloomberg, New York City mayor.
Look at his little peanut head.
Yes.
He looks like the Planner's peanut guy.
He does. Well, he's making headlines this week because, did you guys hear about his Negro son, Leroy?
Oh, Lord.
Apparently, he has a Negro son, Leroy. No, not really. But he has a Twitter son whose name is Leroy. Bloomberg was in the headlines because of the fact that he made some remarks about the change in the stop and frisk laws that are taking place in New York. Now, we reported last week that they have been ruled as being racially biased. So there's a judge who's
unconstitutional.
So a particular judge is trying to kind of change the system and the way of thinking with the stop and frisk laws in New York City, which we're all happy about. Mayor Bloomberg, who has been a supporter of the stop and frisk laws, made a interesting statement. I'll read it right now.
Interesting.
Interesting statement. That's all I can give him. When he was asked this week in an interview with, I believe, New York Magazine, in the interview, he actually says that if he had a Negro son, excuse me, if he had a son who was stopped, I might feel differently about it in reference to the stop and frisk laws and having a Negro son and having a son in general who gets stopped for this stop and frisk stuff. Now, after that, the Twitter world went a little crazy because they created a fake account for a gentleman by the name of Leroy Bloomberg. And in the fake Twitter...
Black people,
you gotta love them. In the Twitter... it's an Afro sporting Bloomberg who has the name Leroy, as I mentioned. And it says, I got stopped by a cop once. It was the scariest 40 seconds of my life until the cop realized my dad was Michael Bloomberg. Then I got ice cream. Now, I don't even know what to really say about that because the picture was so crazy. And
his statement is so ignorant.
His statement is just...
If I had a son, well, maybe I would think about it. Well, what?
It's further, but it's just further evidence of this whole theory that, like, when you are not experiencing that, like, there's no effort in this country made to empathize with it. So to you, you're so far removed from it. Like, you're in a policymaking position. Of course you think it's fine. It's just sad because there's no, can you say, like, okay, dress up like, everybody's required to dress up like a black man and walk around this country for a little while to see what it really feels like and what it really is experiencing. Like, because I have no idea how else to make people understand and empathize with what's going on with it. Because you can hold them at fault, but can you really? Because in the end, he's only got the experience that he has as a technically a privileged white man in American society.
Yeah.
So in his mind, like, it's just, I don't know where that line and gets to be drawn to. It's, I don't know.
And that's fine that's the case, but in your position, you're supposed to be learning, you're supposed to be making changes, you're supposed to be doing the best for your community.
Yes.
And to make a statement like that, I hope when he made that statement, it was kind of like a light bulb went off in his head, like, oh, maybe I should be thinking and empathizing with these people, versus, oh, yeah, you know, if I had a son, I'd think about it. Like, are you even in office? Why are people, like,
right
at this point, that's what people need to be looking at.
Right.
The fact that you would even say some ignorant ish like that. Well,
unfortunately to me, is like an arrogance, too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's such an arrogance to think that you can't even take yourself out of something 5 minutes and just relate to something that doesn't affect you day to day. And it's actually sad and scary to me.
It's
because these are people who are running things.
Yes.
And if you have to have a form of empathy at some point,
mm-hmm.
even if there's lots of things that don't affect my life on a day to day, but I have empathy for, you know, and these are people, a position of power who can make moves and changes. And it's scary to me that until you get an interview, you can't even, this whole time you are been supportive of the stop and frisk laws and you have not taken a moment to think about how African Americans or young Latinos feel about
this. He's just saving the world.
Yeah, I mean,
just
because of you saying statistically that it has changed things.
I had gingerbread cookies last night.
It's about math. That's why for me it becomes this big conundrum of crazy. Like, how does this ever get stopped? Because for them, all it has been able to be at this point is math. And if you're told that this is
meaning
going
like,
to
what
stop
are the numbers,
the numbers,
what
like 42% of Hispanics are the ones robbing banks. Okay, let's do this because that will drop that percentage to 36. It's not people. It's not communities because it doesn't have to be. We live in a country that is about money and making it work and how do we make more money.
Yeah.
And if the communities having problems, they're not... He's not going to hang out in the communities and spend, like,
right.
It's not a requirement to become governor to, like, go hang out in the Bronx for 6 months and exist as a Bronx resident and exist as
it
a Brooklyn
be.
Resident.
That
I mean,
be.
Maybe
be.
That's what it is. Yeah. Like, but that's sort of walking in the shoes of other people before you can be qualified to do these things. And I just don't personally see how that'll ever actually happen in this country. But I really don't see any other way because as long as it stays math and your own personal perception of what life and experience has been, it's going to be this way.
It's going to be this way.
We would have to have an amazing candidate who is just to an extent almost worshipped by the way of their good actions,
right?
To get for people to really understand, like, wait, we can put people in office that do care, that think logically, that aren't a part of this community.
I think we need to create an island of ignorance. And there are several people who I'm going to start pulling on that island.
That would be the majority of this country.
I feel like there needs to be an island where of non-ignorance, because then I feel like we'd all fit on one boat.
We all fit on one boat.
That would be smaller, and it would be
and we'll just go live there.
Exactly.
But there is one person who I'm going to add to the island of ignorance. I'm putting Bloomberg on there, but there's another person. Her name is Colorado State Senator Vicky Marble, who stunned her colleagues this week because she was giving an interview as well and made a comment about
she just cares, y'all.
Black people, poverty, and chicken, and that should not be in the same sentence.
Oh my God.
All right, we have a little clip here of Miss Vicky. I'm gonna call her Viggy. Miss Vicky Marble, and her.
Like
we have
Piggy.
A little audio clip of this. Let's play it for a second.
I've been looking at these infant mortality rates and through your brochure, which is very well done. And I have a question. If, you know, you're just taking I don't even know how to put this. I guess it's like.
She sound hungry.
She wants some chicken.
circumstances. Like drug addiction.
As far as Mr. Hubbard, let's let her finish and then actually technically it's supposed to go through me. It's not a control thing. I've said that time and time again. But for folks that are listening, it helps them to know who's responding. Please continue, Senator Marble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would like to know, do you have a study of the infant mortality rates with the white, the Latino, and the black drug addicted mothers?
This is where it gets good.
So we can see in that how they compare, because I bet they're pretty much on a even keel if you compare that. But also when you look at life expectancy, there are problems in a black race. Sickle cell anemia is something that comes up. Diabetes is something that's prevalent in the genetic makeup, and you just can't help it. Although I gotta say,
best part
I've
right here,
never had better barbecue and better chicken, and ate better in my life than when you go down south. I love it, and everybody loves it. The Mexican diet.
Okay. All right. I think we've heard enough.
The Mexican diet.
I think we've heard enough.
All right. First of all, she sounds like she's on MSG or something. I don't even know what we would call her on. Like, she sounded like I couldn't even listen to her voice.
No, what I love is that, you know, we could talk about our diabetes. We can talk about our health issues and
it's
poverty.
Only black people.
And it's only black people and Mexicans.
Yeah.
First of all. And then, but you know what? Our chicken is damn good.
And this is the sad part, is in her mind, everything she said was not ignorant, was not racist. And when she made that comment about the chicken, when she made that comment about the chicken, in her mind, she was like, this is what everyone will feel like. I'm on their side. Like,
I'm down.
But you guys make the best chicken. Like, girl, take yourself to that island that we was just talking about.
Did you not just see Paula Deen in the news? Vicky Marble. Vicky, this is between you and I right now. I need you to do some more research get your life together, Vicky.
Get your life.
Get your black facts together, and I don't want you talking about chicken no more.
And don't drink before you do an interview.
Do not drink.
Damn, girl.
Courtney, I just see you shaking your head. Just please, I just want to know what's in that brain right now.
What the hell was that? Like, what? Huh? Like, I don't even
know how they're related.
I wish we could have listened to the Mexican dialogue.
I was trying to take notes. She said the black race, last time I checked, it was the human race. And then she brought up sickle cell anemia. What the hell that had to do with chicken, I still don't understand.
I'm still trying to figure that out. I was
sure
confused
that's a genetic
that.
Disease.
Yes.
And then she brought up diabetes. Okay, maybe because, you know, type 2, you know, you're overweight. Are you saying that the black people get fat because they eat the chicken and that's why we have all these diseases that you want to evaluate? Like, I have no idea what she was trying to say.
I just feel like she had a bunch of different facts. snacks, and she didn't know how to put them all together.
I'm not
and
mad
then
at her.
She went
she
into
was
the Mexican
on drugs.
Diet. Like, she did sound high.
She did sound high, but, you know.
Like, you're a senator, and this is how you...
And what we did cut off, what she did say about Mexicans, is that Mexicans eat healthfully until they immigrated to America. It was her last part of that statement.
Well, I mean, but that's people in this country, period, because we eat processed fast food, like craziness. Like, I don't even know. I mean, thank you for liking my fried chicken. Go somewhere and sit down.
Yeah. Well,
and stay.
Rhonda Fields, who is Rhonda Fields, who is one of the Democrats in the committee, part of who was listening to her speech, said that she felt that Vicky reinforced stereotypes. But what she said was positive is that now that Vicky made those statements, it gives us a wonderful platform to talk about poverty for our state.
But
I didn't even get that from that.
I didn't get anything from that. That's my point.
I got nothing from it.
I don't feel like she was, I would say I don't even think she was racist. I think she was out of her mind. Like, it didn't make any sense.
It made no sense.
There were no links made. There were no, like, I have no idea where she was going with
that. I'm scared for her.
And she did say the Southern, like, I don't know. I guess she thinks all Southerners are black, and maybe that's what the link is.
Yeah, like...
I don't know where she was going.
I just can't, like, do you ever eat a KFC? And that is a white man up on that fried chicken board.
Is she a state senator or a U.S. senator? Because Colorado, maybe y'all shouldn't have legalized marijuana.
Right.
Because y'all obviously were smoking when y'all voted for her.
Vicky Marble is the Colorado state senator.
Okay, so she's a state senator.
That's what it was. Yeah. She was high, and she was, it was probably early in the morning. She did the interview, and she was got hungry. You know when you get that, like, die-hard stomach?
She wanted some chicken.
You got lightheaded. She was like, black people.
She just wanted some chicken.
Chicken.
She wanted some chicken.
Barbecue.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
We forgive you.
You know what? I wish we had asked Wayne Brady what he thought about this comment today. Maybe we can catch him next time. But we did have Wayne talk about one last thing. I know he was featured earlier on the show. And the new season of Let's Make a Deal premieres this fall in September.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the little kind of closeout that Wayne had to give about the excitement for the upcoming season of Let's Make a Deal.
So, Wayne, we know that Let's Make a Deal premieres September 23rd.
Yes, sir.
What can fans expect for the new season?
For the new season, they can expect the same old, same old. And by that, I mean they can expect money, so much money being given away. They can expect cars, trips. I think that now that we're going into our fifth season, now we've definitely caught this groove that we hit on last season, where we've become destination TV, that people, it's not just a game show, because that's the thing that I wasn't hip to. I was like, oh, I don't want to do just a game show, because I'm not a game show host. I think of some corny dude with a long microphone going, here's your prize. And that's not me. We wanted it to be fun, unexpected, a little heartfelt, and most of all, I think to be able to use this platform to help, especially in this day and age, to be able to give money away, that even $1,000, $500, $2,500, that's life-changing for some of the people that come in these doors. And then to give trips and living rooms, we've given away cars. I think at one point we have the super deal where we're giving away $75,000, $50,000. No one else on TV is doing that, combined with the spontaneous improv and show that you'll get here on Let's Make a Deal. And so that's what we're giving people. And I think it's just gotten even better.
Well, you're like a triple threat. You're a host, you're an actor, you're a music artist. I know you're working on an R&B album. What can fans expect to hear from your new sound?
It's the same. I had a record a few years ago that I was nominated for a Grammy for called Long Time Coming. You can pick it up on iTunes. A lot of you don't know about it because the record company didn't exactly do their thing. It's old school soul with a modern sensibility, because that's just... That's me. I think that I'm an old school cat, and I would like to think I bring the taste from that era to being a guy that lives now. And Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and modern melodies with the same kind of production that you'd hear on a CeeLo record. So.
And for your fans who want to follow you for Let's Make a Deal and also to find out more about your album, where can you be found on social media outlets?
Social media, you can find me at WayneBrady.com, at Wayne Brady on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram at it's Mr. Brady Baby. I'm going to ask my daughter, right? Now, is it Mr. spelled out or is it just MR? Yep, my 10-year-old knows more about the internet than I do. So it's Mr. Brady, baby. And, of course, please follow Let's Make a Deal at Let's Make Deal CBS. at Let's Make Deals CBS, and make sure to catch me on the new season of Whose Line Is It Anyway. We are back on the air. The show is killing it. So just check my website, and I'm on tour. The whole nine.
All right.
Be sure to tune in. You're watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits. I'm Dario Kristen, and we'll see you soon. We're with Wayne Brady today.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So, Courtney, where can your fans find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Stuart Starlet.
On Twitter and Instagram at DJ Jesse J.
And you can find me at Dario Kristen on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thank you guys for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live this week. We had a great time. We had some great topics. And thank you, Wayne Brady, for joining us as well. Yes. He gave a lot of good insight. And be sure to watch Let's Make a Deal on September 23rd.
It looked really fun. Great set.
I know it does. Yeah, I want to go on.
I want a costume.
I need to get a costume, though.
Yeah,
let's get one. Let's go together.
And don't forget to go to our website and vote for the buzzer meter question. Do you think Obama would still be president if he was dark-skinned? We had some things to say about that today. We would love to hear what you have to say. So go vote, and we'll read the results next week.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not from producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Dario Kristen, and the entire BHL staff. We would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.